Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. We've got Mike Lanana and John Manuel here to talk about some college baseball. This podcast, like all college baseball content at baseballamerica.com, is sponsored by Louisville Slugger, Power in Numbers. And we have a new Baseball America Top 25 this week to talk about. It looks a little bit the same at the top. Oregon State continues to roll right along. 19 wins in a row now. That's a program record, tied for the second longest winning streak in the country this year. But beyond Oregon State and Louisville and TCU hanging out at the top three, things look a little bit different following that. We have North Carolina coming up to four following a sweep in Tallahassee of Florida State. We'll definitely talk about that. Auburn comes into the top 10 at number seven, having beaten South Carolina. We'll talk about that.
We'll definitely talk about that.
And Oklahoma comes into the top 10 at number nine, having beaten Texas Tech. And I have a feeling we'll get to that one as well. So there's a lot that went on this weekend. Also joining the top 25, we might as well get to that as well here. Long Beach State, Southern Miss, Mississippi State, and Maryland. Southern Miss and Mississippi State for the first time ranked for the first time this season. Maryland and Beach back for the first time since the preseason rankings. But I think that we all want to talk about what happened in Tallahassee this weekend. There was a pretty stunning sweep there, and I don't know how surprised we are that North Carolina won this series, but the way in which they won it, I think, is pretty surprising. They go out, they win on Friday night with J.B. Bukauskas. That's happened a lot this season. Then on Saturday, Florida State's throwing a no-hitter into the ninth inning, and UNC finds a way to tie the game and then win it in extras, and then they win a slugfest on Sunday in comeback fashion again. Mike, just what are your takeaways from this weekend?
My main takeaway is
forgot about that.
But yeah,
where's the button?
It's the entire thing is the button.
You're pressing a panic button for Florida State. Is that what you're doing?
That's what I'm doing. I think it's time to panic if you're Florida State right now, just because you look at their resume and we had a tough time. You know, we kept them in our top 25 just given, you know, the talent on the team and the belief in a team that they're going to turn it around at some point. Obviously, Mike Martin's been doing this for a very long time. And
almost as long as it would take for him to speak that sentence. he's done this a long time.
But, you know, it was obviously UNC was the hotter team coming in. They've played better this year. They have the better resume coming in. But to see a sweep at Tallahassee, you know, the first ever in program history for UNC, it was a little surprising, especially the way they went about it. You know, this was the series in the country this weekend. I tweeted about it. I know you guys are already all following me on Twitter, so I'm sure you already read this. But just it was a series that I was watching closest, just because it was a chance for both teams to make a statement, and both teams did make a statement. A powerful statement for UNC about where they are right now. I mean, they're looking like, you know, obviously number four in our rankings. They're looking like an Omaha team right now. Whereas Florida State, the statement was, hold on. That was the statement for Florida State. So, yeah, I don't know.
We're not making any silly jokes.
I don't know. No, we weren't going to stop making silly jokes. So, John, what do you make of the Seminoles at this point? It's kind of weird to see this with them right now.
I'm really flabbergasted. This was the opposite of beautiful baseball. Because like you guys said, you lose on Friday to Bukauskas, tip your cap. Bukauskas struck out six of the first nine guys he faced. You know, Florida State did adjust to a degree. But, I mean, J.B. Bukauskas right now, outside of, I mean, like, it's a discussion between who's the best pitcher in college baseball, him or Brendan McKay. It's a legit discussion. Those are the two best guys. I mean, I'm just looking at the draft class, I suppose. I should go beyond that, but it's Baseball America. I drank the Kool-Aid 20 years ago. I only think of it in those terms. So, but the next two games, Florida State made 11 errors. I mean,
6 errors on Saturday
and 5 on Sunday. Their line score on Sunday was 7 runs, 6 hits, 5 errors. That and North Carolina made no errors the whole weekend. So that's where that series was won. Florida State certainly scored enough, and they blew leads. Their bullpen, I think we all had questions about coming in this year. That was a question for them last year. They haven't answered that. But Florida State's defense, I don't think we thought was a question. Now, Dylan Busby didn't play this weekend, shoulder injury. They still scored some runs. They suspended Taylor Walls, took him out of the game mid-Saturday, suspended him for Sunday and Monday, so no baseball activities today for Taylor, which most teams take Monday off anyway. So the Monday suspension, not such a big deal. But that's the part that just shocked me. The takeaways for North Carolina are that, they still haven't figured out who their Sunday starter is. They tried Rodney Hutchinson that day. But that's a good problem to have. If that's your number one problem, you're in the haves. You're not in the have-nots. And Jason Morgan threw 4 1/3 for them Sunday. He's their old Sunday starter. He did walk 5, but he only gave up 1 hit, 1 run. Taylor Baum pitched on Sunday. Maybe he shifts from the midweek to the Sunday start. He's been a pretty solid midweek starter for them. Josh Hyatt pitched both Friday and Saturday, went 2 innings on Friday, pitched back-to-back days, was still effective on both days. So there are a lot of positives for North Carolina. For Florida State, I don't know what the positives are. And Teddy, their resume is startling, and it's the opposite of me. It's very, very thin.
It's unbelievable. I mean, when we look at teams, we oftentimes I'm constantly looking at who's your best series win,
right?
And I don't know who, but Florida State. You look at it; it's not just who's their best series win; it's who's their best win. Period. Like they got swept by UNC, so they don't even have the win there. They have lost twice to Florida in midweeks, including this week. They lost at Gulf Coast. They've just most of the good teams on their schedule they have lost to, and with where they are right now, it's kind of hard to pinpoint.
What are they good at? That's what it's hard to pinpoint.
They're good at taking walks. That is definitely what they're good at. On Saturday, they one of their issues right now is that they aren't hitting. Like if you look at their on base percentage, it's just fine. Like every Mike Martin team, they're very disciplined and patient. But they get on base, but at some point you either have to walk the bases loaded, which is difficult, or you have to you have to find a way to get hit. They had 5 hits on Saturday. They drew 8 walks, but if you only have 5 hits, you're not going to drive in runs.
And if the other team isn't making any errors.
Right.
So that's the thing. So Carolina walked them, but they didn't make errors. Here's where you need to press the panic button, Mike. Florida State, this is from Corey Clark in the Tallahassee Democrat. I can't talk over that. Actually, I can. When Florida State has played the Gators, 1-8. When they haven't played the Gators that week, 17-3. I mean, the Gators are in their heads.
I mean, they have to be, just given the way that series has gone. But you can't. It's one thing to be in your head when you're playing the Gators, but you cannot allow that to spill over to the rest of your week.
It seemed like it is, and then you have this other stat that they've won 40 games in a row. 40 games in a season, 39 years in a row. That is beautiful. But you look at the schedule, it's not bloody likely this year that they're going to win 22 more games. They've got we'll see them this weekend in person. We'll see the carnage up close and personal. It's like a loser leaves town series with them and NC State this weekend.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, two teams that we thought highly of coming into this year.
Those are two top 15 teams coming into the year.
Yeah.
And Florida State also got Drew Mendoza back this week.
That's the silver lining. Yeah.
And he went 0-10.
Yeah.
He had a totally empty weekend.
Well, so he comes back. Welcome to college baseball, Drew.
Here's JB Bukowski.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Then they've got Clemson, they've got at Miami, they've got Virginia. They still have to play Wake Forest, and they still have to go to Louisville. The easier part of their ACC schedule is past. I mean, except for maybe Miami, which is like the segue of that's the other team. This is like the ACC's football discussion 10 years later, where 10 years ago they expanded, they brought in Miami, and the whole point was Miami's in one division and Florida State's in the other, and they're supposed to play each other in the ACC football championship game. And I don't think that's ever happened. You know, both those football programs fell off at about the same time. Miami's more precipitously.
Obviously, the Seminoles have fully recovered since then.
No doubt. But Miami now sits at 5-7 in the ACC after losing a home series to Wake Forest. First time they've ever lost that home series, correct?
Yes.
To Wake Forest?
Only the second time ever that have they lost a series to Wake.
And, you know, the Deacs are 8-4. We were on the Deac train early. I think Mike was actually the engineer of the Deacon train. You might have built the freaking boiler. You're like the Boilermaker guy, like over in your cubicle. That picture's still there.
I don't know.
It's like Alan Dykstra come to life. It's a giant Boilermaker dude running down first base. So I'm mixing my metaphors here. Wake Forest.
Yeah,
I'm trying to bring it back to Wake Forest.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how to respond to any of that.
Don't respond to it.
But yeah, what I will say is, yeah, I have been on the Deacs train. I have been, you know, again, if you read my Twitter, which I think all of you do, I think it's been established that everyone who's listening to this, it follows me on Twitter. Yeah, I've been on Wake Forest really since the beginning of the year because it's a team that obviously, I mean, they lose Will Craig, but I think they're a deeper, more well-rounded offense than they were a year ago, and I think the more significant thing is their pitching staff is deeper. And you look at what Connor Johnstone did this weekend, for instance, a guy he's not going to blow it by you with his stuff. It's so-so stuff, you know, a mid-80s fastball, you know, a sinker kind of guy. But he throws his second complete game shutout of the year, you know, shuts out Miami, you know, in Miami, which even though it's a down year for the Hurricanes, it's still a tough thing to do in that ballpark. And then, you know, getting Parker Dungey back, he's been, you know, he started off a little rough this year, a little rough around the edges, but he's been getting back into form. And, you know, he pitched well this weekend. And, you know, Donnie Sellers got off to a really hot start for them this year. And then Griffin Roberts in the back end of the bullpen is a guy with a lot of helium, you know, as far as the draft goes. So they're a really interesting team, and I'm interested to see how they match up with Louisville this weekend.
Right.
You know, I think obviously you have to give Louisville the edge in that series because it's in Louisville, and, you know,
it's
you look
the law.
At and it's
they yeah, are that good.
Yeah, so it's yeah, but I'm just curious to see. I'm not expecting Wake Forest to come away from that with a series win, but maybe they could take a game. You know, just curious to see how they match up.
But Miami scored 6 runs the whole weekend.
Yeah, which is impressive. I think it kind of reflects both on, you know, the struggles with Miami's offense right now, but also the growth on Wake Forest's pitching staff.
Right. I mean, to me, Teddy, Miami, we both saw them last weekend and a little bit the weekend before against NC State. They scored 12 runs against NC State that weekend. They scored 11 against North Carolina. They scored 6 this weekend against Wake Forest. There's really one week all year, the Georgia Tech weekend, that Miami scored. They had 2 double-digit game scoring games. They scored 2 runs the whole weekend against Florida. They even struggled to score a little bit against Rutgers.
They only scored 3 runs against Dartmouth.
This is just a bad offensive team. And Miami has, what is it, a 44-year regional streak? And I said this on the broadcast last week. Jim Morris is a great coach. He has if you do a college baseball Mount Rushmore of coaches.
Which we did last week.
There are 3 of them who are there. We talked about that. He has a claim to that. But they're 12-16 this year and 5-7 in the league. I know they have a little bit easier schedule going forward than they've had to this point. But who's in the bigger risk of not making the NCAA tournament? Is it Florida State or is it Miami? I think you think it's Florida State.
Well, okay, so I know I am not ready to press the panic button. Don't do it, Mike, because I'm not ready to do it on Miami because, you know, I do think...
I did it anyway. I do what I want, Teddy.
I do think Florida State probably is in a better position to make the tournament. They have a winning record, for instance. That's a start. That's a good starting point. But their expectations are higher. Their expectations this year were to be a national seed, and that is probably flown out the window already. Miami's expectations were lower. I know the expectations at Miami are forever going to be win a national title, but more realistically, they were, you know, we didn't rank them coming into the year. It was hard to see them as even a potential host. So I think they can still make the tournament. Their RPI is sitting at 76 right now.
Oof.
It's not good. It's not good enough to do it. But, you know, their next two series are Duke and at Pitt. Then they have Florida State at home, BC, Bethune, Virginia Tech. Most of these series are very winnable.
It's a much easier road to hoe. I'm never sure which the cliche is. They have a much easier schedule ahead of them, in my mind, than Florida State does.
And they only go on the road for 10 games.
And one of those is FIU.
Of them is FIU. Three of them are Virginia, but that means they have six on the road against BC and Pitt. And while those two may not be huge RPI bumps, although Pitt is top 100 right now, they are going to be potential. That's the potential for road wins, which is hugely beneficial in your RPI. And just collecting any wins right now is going to be beneficial to them. I really would not be surprised if this team pulls itself together in the second half of the season, gets itself into a decent enough shape to get into the tournament, particularly because they're playing in the easier division in the ACC. Outside of Carolina, and I think we still think Virginia is very good, even though they're only 5-7 in the league, outside of those two teams, the rest of the Coastal is very much up for grabs.
Yes.
Virginia Tech and Pitt are sitting there at 6-6. You know, Georgia Tech's at 4-8. They're not out of it, I wouldn't think. And Duke's at 5-7. I mean, any one of those teams could probably put it together, and finishing third in that division may very well be enough to get you into the tournament this year.
It's stunning to me that, like, that Georgia Tech, I understand the Tristan English injury was significant, but they've lost all four ACC series. They're 1-2 in every series. Duke lost a home series this weekend to Pittsburgh. That's not what you want. So kudos to Pittsburgh. Virginia Tech is kind of the interesting kind of team in there. But you know, that Louisville-Wake Forest series coming up this weekend, that's compelling theater because, you know, Louisville keeps on, you know, doing it, 24-3 overall. And I just kind of like the fact that they've been challenged the last two weekends, you know, losing Friday in NC State last weekend, still coming back to win the series, getting pounded on Saturday by Virginia, coming back to win the series in a tight game Sunday. They have that kind of, it's that ability to pull out some of those wins. And obviously Louisville's kind of on this, I don't know if I can say redemption. It seems like that word is reserved for North Carolina basketball. But I think there is a little redemptiveness for these upperclassmen at Louisville of the last 2 years, having these really talented clubs that fell short in super regionals. There's a little motivation, it feels like, for them. And obviously a big test for Wake Forest, going to have to go on the road. Louisville's played a challenging schedule already.
Louisville's at home this year, so it's a very difficult place to play. It was extremely difficult place to play last year. I think they only lost one home game in the regular season last year. Yeah. So Wake Forest really has its work cut out for it this weekend.
And Louisville's only got their road series left in the league are Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, Clemson. So Clemson, the second to last weekend of the season, that should be fun. I would imagine that Louisville and Clemson will be fun when they play each other this year. I was afraid that you were hitting the panic button on Louisville for a second.
I like to keep it close because you never know.
Well, I was going to say, we were in the SEC. I don't think anyone in the SEC presses the panic button yet.
No, I mean, there have been...
Other than maybe Tennessee, I guess.
Well, Tennessee's sitting there at 1-8 in the league. That is not great. And Alabama at 2-7. But beyond those two teams, I mean...
Sorry, a little delayed there.
LSU is coming off of back-to-back series losses. It was a stunning loss on Saturday against A&M.
Yeah, come from ahead loss, basically.
Yeah.
Like, how can we lose this game? Oh, I'll find a new way.
It was sassy, Mike. Mike just threw my pet across the room for absolutely no reason. I didn't even criticize Wake Forest today yet. but LSU,
And that was a big, like, Texas A&M to they keep from panicking for their season. That was huge for A&M.
Yeah, it definitely was.
I mean, to get that walk, it wasn't a walk-off because it was in Baton Rouge. I mean, but to get that ninth inning home run was it was critical. And LSU now with the loss to Florida and then the series loss to A&M, now they face Arkansas, which is sitting atop the SEC West, tied with Auburn. You know, that becomes a very, very big series this weekend at Baum. But speaking of division leaders in the SEC, so we have Kentucky leading the East at 7-2 after beating South Carolina, after beating Ole Miss. And then in the West, we have Arkansas and Auburn at 7-2. Auburn having beaten South Carolina in a stunning walk-off ninth inning, three-run pinch hit home run from Connor Davis. It was his first career home run.
That was crazy.
It's unbelievable, and they're now 5-1 against Florida and South Carolina this year.
It's really strange that the top records in the SEC are Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky. That's just that. I don't think that's ever happened.
I asked this on Twitter last night. Because
you're all following Teddy.
Yeah, I mean, we're all following Mike.
Yeah, I mean, we've already discussed that at length. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that everyone is following me.
And I'm sure you're all following me.
Maybe. I don't know.
I thought we established last week my Twitter game was better than yours.
No. I don't think anyone's ever thought that.
But anyway, so I asked last night, who's the bigger surprise SEC division leader, Auburn or Kentucky? And you can throw Arkansas into this. At the time I tweeted this, Arkansas hadn't finished their win against Alabama. But neither one. Auburn was second to last in the SEC last season. Arkansas was dead last.
Right.
And Kentucky was better, but missed the tournament, has a new coach in Nick Mangione, and has to deal with, you know, the trio of Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and Florida in the East, even if Vanderbilt looks to be down this season. So the people on Twitter, we have 240 votes. They have Auburn 55%, 45% for Kentucky. I think right now I agree with that, just based on Auburn's schedule. But if this were to finish that way, if they maintain this throughout the rest of the year, I think I would flip it and I would say Kentucky, just because you're dealing with Florida and South Carolina in that division. And those two teams, even though they lost to Auburn, like, I still feel like those two teams are pretty, pretty good.
It's just shocking to me because I feel like Vanderbilt's still pretty good. They haven't really, again, like, they pushed Kyle Wright to Saturday this weekend, started Patrick Raby on Friday. He's been outstanding all year. He gets hit hard. It's not like Jared Kendall's not performing. He's got 10 home runs. Does that lead the SEC behind Rooker?
He's ahead of Rooker. One ahead of Rooker.
I mean, you know, so one of their stars has performed. We know they have multiple options on the mound. I'm stunned that they've struggled. I'm a little bit less stunned, I guess, just looking at the schedule for like Florida and South Carolina. They've played some tougher schedules, but which is more sustainable? I guess which is one's a bigger surprise. Which is more sustainable to you guys, Auburn, Arkansas, or Kentucky? It feels like Auburn's gotten two of those tough series already out of the way, in the other division, having to play South Carolina and Florida, winning both. And if they get Keegan Thompson back, that's more of a pitching and defense team. That feels like they're a little bit more sustainable to me than Arkansas and Kentucky. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, Mike.
Yeah, well, looking at the schedules, I mean, Kentucky's upcoming schedule is
robust.
That's one word to use for it. Another word you could use for it is, but
that's not a word.
It is a word now. I mean, this week alone, they're playing Louisville midweek, and then they go to Mississippi State, who obviously is coming off a big sweep of Ole Miss, and then still have a series against LSU, still have to go to South Carolina, and then they finish at Florida to end the regular season. So that's a really tough slate for Kentucky. You know, in terms of sheer talent, I like Kentucky the best of those three, and it's a team that, you know, we had discussed potentially as a top 25 team coming into this year, but just with the questions with the coaching change and, you know, starting three guys who don't necessarily have starting experience, that, you know, there were some questions there. But I like their club. You know, they've got some arms. They've got really a balanced lineup, and you know, they're really hitting well and swinging it well. And Justin Lewis has been really good for them on the mound. And, you know, Zach Logue is a really dependable starter. So I like them, but they do have a tough slate For sure. So, you know, it might be more sustainable for Arkansas and Auburn. You bring up a good point that Auburn obviously has gotten those series out of the way.
Seems like Arkansas, Teddy, is the most offensive of these three teams. Maybe the, I wouldn't say the least athletic. My impression of them, talking to a scout about them, is that they're not – it's a more of a physical club, an older club, power-oriented club than a classic Dave Van Horn athlete, you know, a team with a lot of athleticism that plays with speed on the bases and defensively.
They are hitting a lot of home runs. That has continued.
37 home runs to 17 for their opponents is that's a lot in this day and age of college baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, they're averaging more than 5 runs a game in the SEC.
That's good.
You know, they are producing offensively, and they kind of need to right now. I mean, they're a little banged up on the mound themselves. And have been all year, but Blaine Knight has been incredible on Friday nights for them, and that's been big. But you know, I think that, you know, both of the, again, just Kentucky having to still play, you know, what the, yeah, the schedule they have, it's going to be difficult. The SEC West is much more open still. I don't know. Maybe Auburn and Arkansas will be able to separate themselves, but to this point, you know, Auburn might have the easiest schedule of the group. They have the entire SEC West still to play, and Tennessee is their only crossover opponent left. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how these teams close down the stretch, because, you know, it looks like it's going to be pretty tightly compact the whole season. I think most of these teams are pretty bunched up in terms of talent. I don't know that anyone's truly gonna separate themselves.
To me, it's just even yesterday, pretty huge for Arkansas that, you know, you're on the road. Alabama is kind of down. Coaching change there as well. It's not a top-tier SEC team right now. But you're on Sunday. It's a rubber game of a series. You had to score 3 runs in the ninth and to hold on to that. Tacolini was good for them to get out of the bullpen. He seems like they really have taken to that role. Like you said, Knight's been really good. I'm just impressed that, you know, that they're finding ways to win. And you do have a first-year head coach at Kentucky in Nick Mangione, a second-year head coach in Butch Thompson at Auburn. You know, this is not Dave Van Horn's first rodeo. He's been to, what, Omaha 5-6 times between Nebraska and Arkansas. Maybe he's the X factor, the separator between these three programs of which is sustainable to keep this going forward. And then nipping on their heels, other 6-3 teams are South Carolina and Mississippi State. But it's amazing to me how the SEC just kind of like flattened, you know. It's harder and harder to have a great team, it feels like, in the SEC. There's so many good teams. It just seems like it's harder to dominate, whereas the ACC doesn't seem like it ever has that problem. It always feels like there's a team in the ACC that's going to win 24 conference games, you know. I mean, because there are still teams at the bottom. More often than not, it's BC or Virginia Tech or Pittsburgh. But the geographic imbalance in that league usually means one of those cold, if not two, of those colder weather schools are going to be, they can be had. That just doesn't seem like it's the case in the SEC. And I mean, I guess Tennessee and Georgia have to be counted as kind of perennial doormats right now. It's hard to put that tag on a team, but that seems like that might make it a little bit easier for the South Carolinas, Virginias, Vanderbilts to dominate.
I mean, you have to go all the way back to 2013 to find a year where the SEC was won with more than like 21 wins.
And that was Vanderbilt, Andy, right?
Yeah, Vanderbilt won 26 that year.
26-4. Okay.
26-3. They missed a game.
That was a good regular season team, and they lost in a super regional to Louisville, if memory serves.
Yeah, but since then we've had a bunch of, like, I think 19 wins.
Right, like 20. I was about to say between 19 and 21 wins in the league, that seems like the max, you know, of what's going to win you a division. And that's kind of where they are again. That league is, it's really amazing to me.
I mean, they really beat each other up. There's incredible pitching talent in the league, and the coaches say it all the time, but it really is true. There are no off weekends. There's no real chance to catch your breath. Even when we talk about, like, oh, you know, Alabama, they're 2-7 in the league. They aren't that great overall this year. New coach, all the rest of that. They still almost beat South Carolina in Columbia last weekend and could easily have beaten Arkansas this weekend. Like, no one's going to roll over for you. and they're going to, you're going to be facing talented teams no matter who you're playing at any given weekend in the 10-week stretch. And the other thing the ACC has that the SEC doesn't is there is a bye week. Right. And most of those teams do not schedule difficult in the bye week, understandably so. But the SEC, that doesn't exist. You don't get a chance to either have a whole weekend off for finals, which is difficult on its own, or to play a lesser team. Looking at Florida State's schedule earlier today, they play Pacific, which is a nice team and all, but they're also a sub 150 RPI team.
Yeah. Right, it's Pacific. It's not an SEC team. Let's transition to the Big 12 real quick, because I think you have to get your panic button handy, Mike. Is it time to push the panic button, Teddy, for Oklahoma State? Because this is another preseason top 25 team, Omaha team last year. I mean, one of the things in the SEC that stands out to me, some of the fourth-year players or players who were drafted, like an LSU that has three guys in Poche, Freeman, and Dykeman, who were all drafted last year, didn't sign. They're all totally different team without those three guys. Two of the better college bats in the country draft-wise, and Poche has been especially a lifesaver for them with Lane's early struggles. Oklahoma State seniors have been banged up a little bit. They seem like they miss Donnie Walton as much as we wrote about him last year. Maybe we should have anticipated that, how good he was to them. I mean, they were so good defensively up the middle last year with Thoreau and Walton and some of the veterans they had there. What's going on with the Cowboys? This year's team, 16-11 overall. I mean, part of it is they had to play TCU. They got swept. They lost 2 out of 3 at home. I know West Virginia's good. They lost 2 out of 3 at home to West Virginia in March and April. That's a series you should win. The earlier you play West Virginia, the better your chances. Are you guys worried about Oklahoma State at all?
I'm worried to a certain extent, but these next 2 weekends, they get K-State and Kansas, and they need to make hay against those teams. But if they do that, they're right back where they should be right around 500, and then it beefs up again with Texas Tech and Texas in back-to-back weekends. And so if they can build some momentum the next couple weeks, I think they'll be in an okay spot, and then we'll find out for real when they go to Texas Tech. But it's not good. Where they're at right now is not good. I mean, they're 1-5 in the league, and the Big 12 is definitely tougher this year. It's the number one RPI conference, but you can't afford to fall too far behind in that pack.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about Oklahoma State is, I think losing Trey Cobb for the first, month of the season, they have him back, which I think is big for them. But losing him really had a snowball effect on the rest of the pitching staff. And I think having him back is going to be important.
Slots everyone back into the roles that they're
best suited for. So I think that's going to be helpful. That they've had to figure things out from a position player standpoint, obviously, because they've lost so much there. Garrett Benn just having a really nice year for him, for them, a guy who, always had the tools and the hitting ability, and he's really kind of coming into his own this year. They remind me a little bit. I mean, kind of last year's team too started really poorly. Really struggled early on, and then was able to put it together.
So no panic
down the stretch. I'm not going to press the panic button right now because, I do have some cautious optimism with them that they can put it together. And they do have enough pieces there, especially from a pitching standpoint.
How for real do we think West Virginia is? Because West Virginia they're only 15-10, but they have a very robust RPI. Randy Mazey, see, like he does this every year. West Virginia always feels like an overachiever. It's always on the cusp of the regional, race. Like it's a deeper, better league. It feels like this year. I mean, like they had three teams in Omaha last year. That's unlikely to happen again, just because that's really hard. But it does feel like they are trending toward more than three teams getting regional bids this year.
Absolutely. I mean, I think West Virginia is for real. I think the league is for real. I said this a couple weeks ago that Jim Schlossnagel said he thought every single team in the league was better.
I must have pieced out that podcast before you said that, which has been my want in recent weeks.
There's a reason why they're number one in RPI, because these teams are all going out and winning non-conference games, and now they'll be able to feed off each other. So I think West Virginia, I think we have to take them as for real, because they've won two conference series to start the year, both on the road. They went to Baylor. They went to Oklahoma State. They have four wins from those two weekends.
That's not easily done.
That's tough. And you know, they still have some tougher series to come. But they get both TCU and Texas Tech and Oklahoma, for that matter. They all go to Morgantown. So you know, if you can find a way to win one of those series, to go 4-5 or 5-4 in that stretch, I mean, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And that won't be easy to do. But if they can just do that, you know, what they've already built here with these four early wins, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape. And I mean, the conference as a whole should be looking at 5 or 6 bids into regionals this year. Certainly, at least 4. I mean, they should improve on the last 2 years when they only had 3. You know, that it's a better conference. Their RPIs are better. The teams are better, and that should be rewarded at the end of the season.
Well, one of the teams that's better, that certainly has improved, is Oklahoma. We've talked about their scheduling, their odd scheduling this year. But again, the resume-wise, series win to start the year against Long Beach State, what they did this weekend like at home against Texas Tech, kind of rallying from 4-3 down, winning that game, walking them off on Sunday. Seems like Oklahoma's for real too, guys. And kind of none too soon after some of the struggles they've had the last couple of years. Feels like they've kind of found their stride. I don't know if it's found their stride under Pete Hughes or just maybe this team has found its stride. It seems like they can win with power. They can win with some defense. It seems like a resourceful bunch.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team. I think we were unsure what to make of them for the first few weeks just because the strength of schedule, you know, other than that
it was rando. Rando schedule.
Yeah, it was. So it was tough to really know exactly what to make of them. But I think, you know, the deeper they go, and now that they're starting Big 12 play, I mean, it's a team to obviously fear in the Big 12. I mean, starting off with, you know, back-to-back series wins against both Baylor and Texas Tech is, you know, I mean, because Texas Tech is, you know, as good and as hot as any team in the country coming into this. You know,
not anymore. Yeah.
Not anymore, but a team that, you know, had won 10 straight games and really, you know, hadn't really done anything wrong, you know, right, to this point, which is why they're still, you know, at this point ranked higher, just because the resume is so strong with them. But yeah, I mean, I think this weekend was a really impressive statement by Oklahoma.
Teddy, it seems like Oklahoma's just depth of bullpen just seems like every game I check, I mean, it's just a different guy, and they're not afraid to go to their bullpen early. It just feels like they have a lot of different, again, they can beat you with their starting pitching. They can beat you in the bullpen. I have to admit, I know nothing about Stephen Gingery. He's having an insane year. He has better numbers than Vernon McKay and J.B. Bukauskas, but because he's not a huge draft guy.
Well, I mean, he's only a sophomore. Yeah. But, like, I think Luke Heimlich even has better numbers than Gingery. Gingery has been incredible for Texas Tech.
Luke Heimlich has maneuvered his way up the draft list, and I will always make that joke.
He made, what, like one? I think he gave up one run on Friday night, and his ERA went up.
I'm looking at Texas Tech stats. I'm sorry. I'm not talking about
Oklahoma. No, Luke Heimlich gave up one run in a complete game effort,
which is brutal for him.
His ERA went like up by a tenth of a run.
It went from 0.42 to 0.52. So I think, honestly,
you've seen him good.
If that trend continues, I didn't see him at his best when I saw him. But if that trend continues, I think Oregon State's in trouble, because if his ERA keeps going up by a tenth of a run, I mean, it's about to be one.
But they eventually will get to one.
Yeah, so I don't know if they're going to be able to handle that as a team.
But I mean, we really like Texas Tech, and what
Gingery
Oklahoma
and Heimlich
did to them are what Oklahoma did to them is stunning.
Well, and so Oklahoma does that without Jake Irvin, its ace. He's been banged up the last couple weeks, and he was incredible to start the season himself. They are a team that, I mean, we talk about a lot of teams mixing and matching. They don't have a pitcher, including Jake Irvin, that's thrown more than 31 innings.
It's ridiculous. Their bullpen's a bunch of guys.
It's just a whole staff effort. They've got a lot of talent there. We've liked some of these recruiting classes that they've brought in the last couple of years, and there have been a lot of good arms coming in. But they're doing this without truly relying on anyone for any extended period of time, and they have a team ERA of 2.69. I mean, like, you look at, they have a lot of guys with double-digit appearances. There are 6 of them. J.B. Olson leading the way with 17. And most of those guys are just coming out of the bullpen, and they're really getting the job done. And I think what Oklahoma is able to do in terms of mixing and matching and just whole staffing it, I mean, it's impressive. And I mean, I don't know whether that's a more sustainable thing than, say, what Florida's doing with right. its, you know, three horses. I don't know, but it's fascinating to watch while the Sooners give this a go.
Yeah, Olsen and Barry have been, they just have sick numbers out of their bullpen. I know that Olsen is the guy that when I've flipped on Fox Sports, I've seen him at the back of their game. It's like, oh, the game ends really fast. And this guy's on the mound. 10.3 strikeouts per nine for Oklahoma staff overall. That seems sustainable. You know, that's a good trend that you can keep going. But I'm a little bit worried, I guess I would say, for Oklahoma State. I'm more worried than you are, Mike, just because I don't like – it's just hard to do that year in, year out, to kind of dig yourself that hole and dig your way back out of it. You mentioned also Texas, Teddy. I think we thought that Texas had kind of been trending in the right direction. Still, in David Pierce's first year there, still off to a pretty good start, but – watch a little bit of them this weekend, and just again, you're supposed to make hay against the Kansas schools, and to lose on the road at Kansas, not you know, not ideal. We'll see them a Red River rivalry this weekend. They're back home against Oklahoma.
They really need this weekend. I think they need it in a bad way. Coming off of that series loss at Kansas, it's a big rivalry. Like this would be, you know, they've already beaten A&M this year. They got swept by Texas Tech. I know that Texas Tech UT is not a huge rivalry or anything, but it would be big for them if they could, you know, go out and make a statement against Oklahoma. And it would be big for them in terms of just getting back on track.
You said big, so I almost feel like I'm contractually obligated to talk about the Big Ten now. So since you said big, we did bring in some of these new teams. Let's wrap up the podcast by talking about the teams that we brought in at the back. We have a Big West team, Long Beach State. I mean, Mike, did you have – we sent on our personal top 25 last night. I didn't have Long Beach in. Did you have Long Beach in your 25?
Well, I forgot to send mine. But in my
– where's the button? Please hit the button. You're going to have to hit the button now. That was just a metaphorical button.
But, yeah, no, I had Long Beach State in mine just because – granted, they are 16 and 11. 6 and 11, obviously, they would not be in our top 25.
Yeah, they would be tall, but they wouldn't be in our ranking.
But yes, but
I didn't have them in.
I had them in.
Just I was wrong.
Just because, you know, you look at what they've done over the last couple of weeks. I think they've finally turned it around. You know, they got off to a difficult start this year. You know, dropping that series to Oklahoma, which now looks like a better series loss.
Right.
Given what Oklahoma has done, but you know, to
and then the Arizona State sweep,
right? Well,
that was sticking in my craw.
That's inexplicable. Like I said last night while I was making Beach's case, like
which
I
made well.
I have no answer for that. But since then, they've been very impressive. You know, they've got that sweep against Fullerton in the non-conference series, and then they open Big West play this weekend with a series win at UCSB. And while Santa Barbara has struggled this year, they've not struggled at home before this weekend.
Right, and I mean, you know, you look at the Big West, Cal State Fullerton, UC Santa Barbara, and Long Beach, you know, in my opinion, and a lot of opinions, are the top dogs in the conference right now this year, just in terms of talent, and obviously in terms of where we had them ranked coming in. And you have Long Beach State, you know, winning series against both of those teams, you know, sweeping Cal State Fullerton, taking 2 of 3 against UC Santa Barbara. And then, you know, they win the series at North Carolina earlier this year, which is very loud.
Keeps looking better week after week after week.
So in terms of sheer record, you know, 16-11 doesn't look great, but you look at the quality of wins that they have, and especially the way that they've played over the last couple of weeks. I mean, they're red hot right now, and, you know, they're a team that, you know, again, a team that we liked in the preseason, a team that we had ranked, and I think they just got off to a so-so start, but they're starting to put the pieces together now.
They're actually leading the Big West in RPI. Their RPI is better than Fullerton's. They're 12, Fullerton's at 20. The rest of the conference is sub-100, which is...
I'm really worried about that, Teddy. I was just about to ask you, this looks like a two-bid league.
It does.
That's not good.
We thought, you know, coming into this year, we had three Big West teams in the top 25. I talked about this being the year of the Big West, and that all looks very overheated right now, because I don't know that some of these teams are going to be able to recover from an RPI standpoint, because unless they go out and they beat Fullerton and Beach,
right.
I don't know where they're, you know, there are buys in the Big West, so Some of them, because they are such aggressive schedulers, are going to have opportunities. For instance, Irvine has Oregon this weekend. But they really, the teams that aren't Beach and Fullerton are really going to need to take advantage of the times, whether it's midweek or when they play Fullerton and Beach, that they play teams with decent RPIs to be able to climb back into the discussion at all, or they're going to have to go out and win the Big West.
The team that I thought was going to be the sneaky one was Northridge. When they go and they win a series at Vanderbilt, that really got my attention. They won 3 out of 4 against Purdue. And then since then, they've lost 7 out of 9.
And somehow they have the worst RPI in the league.
And that's the thing, is because they've lost to teams like Wazoo and Towson. You know, they lost a couple games to Towson, and then they lose at UC Davis. This isn't 2008 UC Davis. You know, Ryan Royster's not walking through that door. I have to share that I still know players, but they're all from 2008. It just stunned me a little bit to see the RPIs in that league. I guess I should almost be just as worried about the Pac-12. You have the number 1 and 2 RPIs in the country right now on WarrenNolan.com are Oregon State and Arizona. And then you have one other team in the top 50, which is Oregon. I mean, Stanford's right around there, and Stanford's played fewer games because of their exam, so the Cardinal will catch up. But I don't like these trends for the West. The RPI always undersells the West, I think, because it's so much harder for the West. Just the sheer number of midweek games, you got to travel more. Those kind of things aren't taken into account. There's just fewer programs. But the mishmash that is the Pac-12 right now behind Oregon State seems like it's hurting the league.
I will say that the entire league is in not only in the top 100, they're in the top 90.
Yeah, it's amazing. No so triple digits.
They are going to, like, because there will be that many top 100 wins for them, some of these teams, when they start separating themselves, will push into the top 50, I assume. You know, you got Oregon saying they're at 49, Stanford at 51, and UW at 58. You know, those teams can all push that high. And UCLA is at 87 and is heating up. And if they can get, you know, continue to build some of this momentum, I mean, they're sitting there in second place, 3 games off Oregon State, is the number 2 team in the Pac-12. You know, I think they'll be fine. But in general, I don't think this is going to be a huge year for the Pac-12. But nor do I think it should be. I don't think that the West is as down this year. I don't think the Pac-12 is as down this year. A sub-500 team is not going to win the Pac-12 this year. But, you know, when you look at some of these teams, you know, okay, you have Oregon State, which is elite. Arizona, we have in the top 10, sure. Stanford, we still feel good about. Washington, I think we still feel okay about.
Yeah.
UCLA is kind of demanding that, and Oregon are both kind of demanding that we pay attention to them. But the rest of the league,
woof.
I mean, USC has been very mixed. Cal somehow got off the mat to get a big, I guess they swept Washington State, but Washington State now looks pretty poor. Arizona State has been stumbling around all season, with the exception of that Beach series. I really don't know what to make of ASU, and you know, Utah is you know, sitting at 12-13 overall, and you know, they won a nice series against Oregon. If they can, you know, maintain that somehow, build off that somehow, maybe they'll turn into something. But the bottom half of this league looks very
like it could be had.
Yeah, I mean, they don't look bad, but they also don't look like tournament teams. So, you know, I don't think that this is a league that should would merit 7-8 bids.
Right. Who's panicking? Arizona State? They should panic. But I mean, I don't think we had high expectations for Arizona State.
Yeah, just the bottom of the league. And I also just hadn't pressed the button in a while, so I had the itch.
I feel like UCLA, like, missed an opportunity, Teddy, because they win on Friday. Griffin Canning's going to do that. Had a scout at NHSI this week tell me. I said, hey, you know, Griffin Canning, I've got him toward the back of the first round in this mock draft. I said, you know, I had a scout tell me it was 3 or 4 55 pitches. And he goes, oh, he's got at least 1+. And then he starts going through it. He's like, hey, you know what? Come to think of it, I've seen him with 4 pluses this year. Not in the same game. But Griffin Canning, you know, is a true ace. They moved Seha, and moved him into the weekend rotation. He pitched into the 6th inning and pitched well.
At some point, Jake Bird will come back.
Right. So then you know they have options. And to me, the real question will be with all these young guys, all these, you know, that are starting, Stumpf and Creedler, and if Idens is playing, you know, Sean Bouchard's hit very well this year. He kind of gives them a fulcrum for the offense to kind of pivot around. If the rest of these freshmen keep adjusting and get better as their first year goes on, or does the rest of the Pac-12 figure them out and kind of reduce this offense that, you know, 17 runs on Sunday was
They've won 7 of their last 8, and in that stretch, and
they've put some huge numbers.
The only time they've scored fewer than 8 runs in that stretch is Saturday, and they scored 4. Like, this UCLA team, we're used to UCLA not scoring runs to the pitching having to carry them. But, you know, maybe this is a product of Cal and Arizona State's pitching not being that great. But, you know, they're finding a way to score runs right now. They dropped 9 on Fullerton in a midweek. And if that continues, this UCLA team can be very good.
That's what I'm saying. I love their offense because I love the athleticism and the dynamism of their freshman class. Can those guys sustain it?
Well, this next 3 weeks is going to be critical. A very good San Diego State team on Tuesday, Washington, Stanford, Oregon State. There's another midweek against Beach in there. That is huge for them. After that, it thins out a lot. They go back to playing the bottom end of the Pac-12. But if they can survive these next 3 weeks, or better than survive the next 3 weeks, you know, UCLA is going to be in a very good position.
I feel like between UCLA and Stanford, these are these two teams that are right around 500 overall. Those two clubs are to me are the key, like, because I think Oregon's going to sustain this. I think Arizona, Oregon State, obviously we got the Kyler of those teams. I guess you have to lump in UW into this. UCLA, UW, Stanford. If all three of those teams can finish well in Pac-12 play, this could be a 6 bid league. And, you know, I feel like it should be 5 or 6 bids every year because it's the Pac-12. But it feels like they have that capability this year. I'm with you. I don't think they're going to sneak in a 7th team. Maybe USC gets hot. I don't think that highly of the Trojans myself. But it feels like those other three teams we're talking about, if, you know, if they play up to their capabilities, this should be a pretty robust league. Now, we didn't bring any of those teams from the Pac-12 in. I got off of the Big West first. I mentioned the Big Ten, Maryland coming into the league. What was Maryland's start? 1-5, and they're like 17-3 since then?
Yes.
What's the quick key on that, Teddy? How they turn things around so fast?
Well, part of it is that the schedule thinned out. Part of it is they went home, and part of it is that they just were better than their 1-5 start. That, you know, we ranked them 24th coming into the year. I mean, we like their talent. We like their pitching staff, especially their rotation. And I think the rotation has really, really been a key for them. Schaefer, Bloom, and Blom have
LLC.
Yeah, they have been very, very strong on the weekends. And, you know, last week they beat Michigan 2 out of 3, and this week they sweep Rutgers. And, you know, sweeping Rutgers is not, you know, the biggest deal, but Rutgers is sitting there with a top 100 RPI.
Right.
And if that maintains, the Maryland gets, you know, 3 really nice wins on their postseason resume. And, you know, we still like Michigan. We had them ranked for that Maryland series. You know, they're still sitting there kind of just outside the 25. And Minnesota's off to a 6-0 start. They've won their last 9 games all on the road.
Right.
And, you know, the Gophers last year won the Big Ten regular season kind of in a surprising fashion. And, you know, they're rolling again this year. So the top of the Big Ten, and you throw Nebraska in, where Maryland is headed next weekend, and even Indiana. I mean, it's a good-looking top part of the league. The rest of the league, I'm not as sure about, but you know what Maryland has done has been impressive, and you know, so they move back in here as we really get into the meat of the Big Ten season.
I like the top of the league, like you said. I was pretty intrigued by Minnesota's 9-game win streak and the schedule that Minnesota has played. I don't think they really, but like you said, it's like Maryland was higher in our pecking order coming into the year. They had that series win against Michigan. Feels like that, you know, made more sense to rank them at this time. But that, I feel like all three of those
their resumes teams are pretty similar when you look at it. I mean, they have the exact same record. Their RPIs are separated by like 3.
Right.
It's all pretty close there. You know, I don't like Minnesota's series loss to Missouri State particularly. But, you know, we're nitpicking here.
Right,
but,
I mean, exactly.
Minnesota and Michigan are pretty close to the 25 as well.
We are picking at nits. Well, the other team that we brought in Mississippi State, but we had plenty of SEC talk.
You can read all about them and off the bat, too.
Yes. You should take us out, though, with a little Southern Miss. It was the other team that we ranked. I mean, Conference USA, again, is pretty tight at the top. This is a very old team. As usual, the good Southern Miss teams have a lot of seniors. I know that they thought very highly of Dylan Bordeaux coming into the year. He's got 6 home runs. He, you know, has 8 stolen bases. He was the guy they pegged as their top offensive force coming into the year, and he hasn't even been that. Taylor Braley, who's like a bad body guy but could really hit, has got 8 home runs.
Well, and Matt Wallner.
Yeah, Matt Wallner's got 9 home runs.
9 home runs for him.
And they even have a draft prospect because it's Kirk McCarty, the left-hander. 88-91, really good breaking ball, left-handed, starting to – he's probably going to be on the cusp of that top 100, updated draft top 100 the next time we do it. This team seems like it's not just good for Conference USA. They seem like they're potential regional host if they keep this up. And I don't know, Southern Miss seems like they're kind of sneaky good to me.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Arkansas earlier about their home runs allowed versus home runs they've hit.
Yeah.
I mean, Southern Miss has hit 44, and they've allowed 18. So
That'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Conference USA, it's very strange to pull up the standings and see Rice at the bottom there at 9-21. But that's probably a podcast for another day talking about
Rice. It just
Rice.
Makes me sad.
But, yeah, no, they've certainly been impressive. I mean, them and Old Dominion, we discussed possibly ranking Old Dominion this week. And
Shout out to the Monarchs. I'm really impressed by them. I mean,
22-6. They don't have a losing weekend yet. They finished off the weekend against Charlotte with back-to-back shutouts. I think it was 23 scoreless innings to finish that series.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you look at what Southern Miss has done this year. I mean, they just beat Mississippi State in a midweek game a couple weeks ago. You know, coming off a sweep of Western Kentucky. Beat South Alabama midweek, took 2 of 3 from Xavier, which was a regional team last year. I mean, really, their only series loss is to Louisiana Lafayette, and that's not a bad series loss.
Sure.
I mean,
it was on the road, too. It's like a battle of gumbo pots, basically.
Yeah, essentially. So, you know, they play midweek against Ole Miss this week, so that'll be interesting to see how they
coming
do
off
there.
A sweep to Mississippi State or other...
Yeah,
as other new entrant into the back of the top 25.
Magnolia State, a lot going on in the Magnolia State.
Is that the Egg Bowl in football?
It is the Egg Bowl. Yes.
I don't know if they do something for that for baseball. I'm sure they do. They
I
don't
call
need to.
All of the rivalries by their football names, and I really don't care if I shouldn't because they're all awesome.
Okay, I think those make sense. Do you know that Clemson and NC State have a football rivalry and they play for something? Did you know that?
I did not know that,
Mike.
I did not know that.
It's called the Textile Bowl. That's the most random one. ACC has some really random ones because it's ACC football.
The Big Ten has the most trophies.
But they have the best ones.
Well, yes, they are awesome, but some of them are ridiculous. Illinois plays Ohio State for an Illibuck trophy, and it's a turtle.
I would imagine that the last time Ohio State lost that one was like whenever Earl Bruce was there?
No, Juice Campbell, I want to say, was the quarterback's name. It was like in like 07.
Oh, yeah, the dude for Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was interesting. I remember him. How about, like, the Axe? Who plays for that Axe?
The Paul Bunyan Axe is Minnesota and Michigan.
That's cool. All their stupid trophies are stupid in a great way.
Like, yes.
Like, old rando traditions. Egg Bowl probably has an old random tradition.
There is an Egg Bowl trophy for the football teams. I don't know that Mississippi State got anything for their win this weekend.
Satisfaction and probably some free beer.
Yeah. Well, and it was quite the weekend for Mississippi State. I know Mike wrote about it on Friday in the roundup with the women's basketball team going to the championship game. And
well, it might be somewhat of a sore subject today
since they
lost to South Carolina. But
Roy Tanner is certainly excited about it with the Gamecocks. You know, I had to bring out. I love to imitate Ray. It's one of my favorite series to do. So I'm going to do it. It's like an air siren for you.
It was a fun women's basketball championship game. The two athletic directors are the two
baseball coaches.
Baseball coaches.
Right.
When you look at it, I mean, we a lot of times people talk about how coaches in general, whether they're football or baseball or basketball, that they don't make for great ADs. Well,
here are
two. I know John Cohen just got this job, and I don't think we can give him too much credit for the women's basketball team success.
He probably
success,
got Dak Prescott there, though, or he probably helped.
Yeah, but I mean, so those two, going out and having some success this March.
Yeah, the American Conference a little bit disappointed. They didn't get that guaranteed national championship they were thinking they'd get with UConn women's basketball. But that is by far the most women's basketball talk ever on the Baseball America College podcast. This I can say for sure. But a lot of change in the poll this week. A lot of stuff you guys have going on. Teddy, what did you have already? And off the bat, I enjoyed your NHSI remembrances also on Friday on campus. If you don't already read Teddy's On Campus, that's just, you got to read that. That's appointment reading for me for college baseball. What's an off the bat today?
Mississippi State and how they kind of have seemingly found their stride the last few weeks. And Old Dominion, which, again, like we mentioned, is off to a very impressive start to the season.
I'm a fan of Old Dominion. I keep an eye on there. A lot of Jersey pitching in college baseball. We've talked about Luca Delatria on this podcast, but John Wilson, a little crafty left-hander out of, I think it's Huntingdon High School. I think I got that with one extra syllable. It's like Old Huntingdon High School. It's some Brando High School in New Jersey that he's from. That guy deals, though. He could really, really pitch. He's off to a great start.
7 scoreless yesterday.
Yeah, just a freshman, little lefty, crafty freshman who goes right into the weekend rotation and has pitched very well. Conference USA, I think, looks competitive again. So thank you for letting me be here for the entire podcast, guys. I'm so excited. I made it through 50 minutes or so, back-to-back pods, Upset City.
It is impressive. And we thank Mike for the panic button, which I'm sure he's going to press again here in a minute.
I'm glad you have it on low. I shouldn't have said that. I'm out.
That'll take us out. Thank you to John. Thank you to Mike. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back here next week with a new Top 25 and plenty more to talk about in college baseball.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.